This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Hey, it's Scott MacArthur and Dave Festchuk on Overdrive, your Tuesday afternoon, TSN 1050. Hit us up on Twitter at ScottyMacThinks, at DFestchuk. The station's Twitter account is at TSN 1050 Radio. We got a couple of polls going about completely and totally different things. And we will get into some NFL chatter here in just a little bit. But Roger Goodell says, as far as he knows, and if he says it, it must be true, as far as he knows, there isn't one team in the NFL that is intentionally tanking. So that got us to wondering, what's the most difficult sport to tank in? The NBA, MLB, NHL, or the NFL? So you can vote at TSN 1050 Radio. And then last hour, we got talking about condo life and how I hate air conditioning and how I'm willing to essentially overheat my place before I ever turn on the AC, because I just hate cold, dry air. I would rather have a warm cross breeze than air conditioning blasting into my condo. That somehow turned into a conversation about Festchuk believing that there are creeps who live in condos who actually peer in from their condo across the way into the windows of other people's condos. And so I'm asking you on Twitter, I want to have faith in humanity. Are there creeps who live in condos, or do we have faith in good people? Well, we posted this like 15 minutes ago. We've already got 143 votes. Humanity is with you, Dave. 60% say condos have creeps. Only 40% have faith in the fact that people are good and aren't spying on their neighbors.
Well, I have faith that the vast majority of people are very good and nice people, that if you ever ran into them, you'd have a great time and you would suffer no harm. But there's always a few, Scotty. And I just have this feeling that, you know, is voyeurism a crime? I don't know. I haven't looked at the statutes lately. But it could probably be fairly harmless. It's probably just somebody with a telescope that's saying, hey, I wonder if Scotty is wearing his pink boxers today. Is he going boxer brief?
Hold on a second. How do you know that I have pink boxers?
See?
You could be that creep. You could be that guy.
I'm saying, man, you just don't know.
Or was that just a lucky guess?
Who is the guy? You just don't know. Man, I'd have a hard time living in the glass box you live in, is what I'm saying. The glass box scares me, knowing what I know about humanity.
That's fair. But again, the blinds are closed, especially this time of year, because you don't want the sun beating in and,
hey, I get it,
heating the place up even worse than it already is.
But you said most of the time, which infers that some of the time they're not closed.
Some of the time, I'm what was Kramer's line to Jerry? I'm out there and I'm loving every minute of it. Yeah, dear God, let's. Like I said, radio's theater of the mind, and this is reaching into dangerous places.
I just invest in some tint, man.
Yeah, there you go.
A little bit of tint would go a long way here.
All right. I'll take your advice. I'll take it under advisement. But like I told you before, I do have Scottish blood in me, which means I'm frugal. If that tint is in any way expensive, chances are I'm going to pass.
Okay.
I've got a budget, Dave. Well, I have to live to it.
Hey, man, you know, take your chances. You believe in the goodness of humanity, and that might have a karmic power. Humanity may pay you back for that.
All right. I'll come up on the right side of something at some point in my life. No doubt about it. Ross Atkins, Blue Jays general manager at 5:30 here on Overdrive with Scott MacArthur and Dave Festchuk. We'll get into a little NFL stuff in just a little bit, including Ray Lewis taking to Facebook Live to deliver a message to Colin Kaepernick. We will play that for you shortly. But we wanted to play a bit of the hypothetical game here, Dave. If you go back a little more than a year now, and of course it was that crazy day toward the end of June where three things happened in the span of a half an hour. It was, and I probably have the order wrong at this point, but if my memory serves, it was Hall for Larson, it was Stamkos announcing that he would stay in Tampa Bay, mm-hmm. and then it was Subban for Weber.
That's all about right.
all in the span of about 20 or 30 minutes in the 3 o'clock hour on that Wednesday in late June last year. It was lunacy. But I want to hone in on the Stamkos decision 1 year later to stay in Tampa Bay, because we didn't know, right? We didn't know that this Maple Leafs trajectory would ascend as quickly as it has. We were told by anybody in that front office, Brendan Shanahan, Lou Lamoriello, Mike Babcock, that there would be pain. And there was a year of pain in the post-horror wreck era, right? The Leafs missed the playoffs in the first year of Mike Babcock. So we thought, okay, well, yeah, man, maybe at best they're going to be a bubble team the second year. We didn't see how quickly this thing would turn around. What if Steven Stamkos had made the decision to, and we know that the Leafs were in hot pursuit of him, to join the Maple Leafs on a contract at or around $10 million. And whether Stamkos was injured with the Maple Leafs, like he turned out to be hurt with the Lightning this past year, that's kind of irrelevant. My point is, what if they had Stamkos's $10 million salary on their books? What would we be talking about right now with Nylander's contract to come up in a year, Matthews and Marner's deals to come up 2 years from now, the need still for a 1 or a 1A defenseman? We would be in some degree of panic mode, right? Because the Leafs would have to divest probably at least one of the young kids coming up in a year or two.
Well, we certainly wouldn't be welcoming Patrick Marleau to town, would we?
That is a certainty.
That's for sure. And I think the injury stuff is relevant, Scotty, because in two of the past four seasons, Steven Stamkos has missed the vast majority of the season with an injury.
And one of them was deeply worrying, right? The blood clots.
When you're talking about blood clots, every case is different, I'm sure. But blood clots ended the career of Chris Bosch, or so far have ended the career of Chris Bosch in basketball. And it's, you know, that's just one guy we know who's with a Toronto connection who's had that problem. And there's no evidence or suggestion that blood clots will end Steven Stamkos' career, because it seems like the problem has been alleviated. But the bottom line is, the guy's turning 28 in the coming season. If he was making $10 million and on your roster for, say, the next 5 to 6 years, you'd be scared. You'd be concerned that he would not live up to that value in the way that maybe Anze Kopitar hasn't lived up to his $10 million deal in L.A. this past season, and the way that the Chicago Blackhawks are probably wondering to themselves if they can ever make contention work with two guys making 10 and a half and as good as Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane happen to be. So they dodged a bullet. Like, Steven Stamkos getting cold feet, whatever you want to call it, because they were all in on trying to get him. Every indication pointed to Stamkos wanting to come to Toronto, and yet he didn't come. And probably is one of the best things that's happened to the Toronto Maple Leafs in the Shanahan era.
So spinning off of that conversation, this is the nerd in me kind of emerging, because you have to deal with this stuff. If you're a Maple Leafs fan, if you're the organization itself, it's still 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 years down the road, Dave. But I wonder, because everything has a trajectory, right? Teams from 2004-05 on, when the salary cap was implemented, we've gone through different phases. We have certainly seen a consistent pattern now where the game has turned extremely young. And in fact, I think it's fair to say that most of the major sports have gone that way, even Major League Baseball, right? I mean, yeah. We've seen it in free agency with the early to mid-30-something power hitters last offseason. They couldn't get contracts that they were anticipating. Right, the game is skewing young. In hockey, it absolutely has. So here's the hypothetical for the look ahead way down the road. Auston Matthews, Mitch Marner's, William Nylander's second contracts will come up.
Yep.
What do we want to say for the sake of argument? Who signed a full-on 8-year deal? Auston has. Do you think he goes 8 years with the Maple Leafs next summer?
Why wouldn't you want him to, and why wouldn't he want to?
Exactly.
The match is there.
Right, and Connor McDavid just did that with Edmonton, so we'll work off of that assumption. Marner, Nylander, these guys are going to get long-term deals. If I'm Nylander, actually, I might bridge just and bet on myself because, I mean, the money is 6-6. I think he's undervaluing himself if he jumps at something like that.
Well, hang on there. That whole scenario changed when Ryan Johansson signed an 8x8 deal last week. I mean, that with the Nashville Predators, that to me changed the whole market because Ryan Johansson, yeah, he's a centerman and he's a big guy, but his production, 61 points. I got news for you. There's two rookies with the Toronto Maple Leafs that had 61 points last year named William Nylander and Mitch Marner. And they and their agents probably clasped their hands together devilishly and said, right. Well, looky here.
Well, then they're going to have a choice to make. Right, because if you want to play on a winning team here in Toronto, I hate talking about this because I am all about players maximizing their value.
Well, if you're about players maximizing, you're not about the NHL because nobody
is.
Well,
exactly. But I just hate the notion of saying, well, a guy has to take less in order to fit into the salary structure of this team to give it the best opportunity to compete and potentially win a Stanley Cup. But being real, that's where it's going to be. But to circle back to the Stamkos part of the conversation, some of these second contracts are going to come up, Dave, and I wonder if the next kind of phase here is, are we going to get a front office here in Toronto that is willing to make some very difficult decisions when some of these guys, not all of them, but some of these guys get to 26, 27 years old. And that is that you trade one of them, or one of them hits unrestricted free agency for the first time coming off of that second contract, and you let him walk, and you supplement with younger players that you've drafted and developed. Because, to your point, nobody will argue with the success of the Chicago Blackhawks, 3 Stanley Cups, the Los Angeles Kings, 2 Stanley Cups. But all of a sudden now, the Taves contract feels weird to say it. The Taves contract looks like a problem. The Seabrook contract was a tough one, just looking at it from the outside in when it was signed.
Yep.
In Los Angeles, you mentioned Kopitar. Dustin Brown is a huge anchor on that team now. These guys on these teams who did so much for you, you won multiple cups. Well, you're now paying them more for what they did than what they can do or what they will do for you down the road. Can the Leafs be that organization? And we're looking 5-7 years down the road that says, thanks for your service, Will. Or thanks for your service, Mitch. I'm not saying to all of them. You don't want to, you're not punting Austin Matthews out of town 6-7 years from now. But if you have to make a hard decision on one or two of those players, will the Leafs be the team that's able to do it? Because it's tough when you're in the trenches.
Well, and that's why you have to have the foresight, the vision to maybe preemptively trade one of those guys before it comes to that, right? That's why you have to figure out where the market values of all your players are. And can you trade one at a high point? Can you sell high on a guy that you know more about than anybody else in hockey? And can you make those internal calls about who you really want to stay for the long term and who you really can't afford to have for the long term? Because you're right. I mean, those decisions are the things that will separate teams, because even Tampa, Stamkos signs at what Steve Yzerman thought was a really good deal of $8.5 million per, but he's on the books for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more years as a guy who's turning 28 next year and has had, a history of injury issues. Not to say he can't turn it around and be healthy for the next 7. Well, let's hope he does. But it's a concern. And then the other thing is, Scotty, like, once you win, and the Leafs haven't crossed this bridge, but once you win, Then you're faced with the decision of, how do I tell guys, if I'm the GM, who gave their blood and sweat and absolute heart to win these Stanley Cups, that I'm not going to reward any of them with contracts? I'm just going to cut them all loose. What's that say about our organizational ethos? And what's it say to the guys who are coming up in the organization who are going to be asked to do the same thing? That's the reason Dustin Brown got a contract that pays him $5.9 million annual average value for the next 5 years. It's the reason they got Jeff Carter on the books for $5.3 million for the next 5 years. It's the reason they got Kopitar at $10 million for the next 7 years. So, but it's a reason why they're not going to be very good, right? Yeah. And why those two cups are going to be their last two for quite some time, unless they can pull off some kind of salary cap miracle.
I just, my view on it is, Dave, and I've grown up in an era where I haven't known anything but free agency, and you're probably listening now and know exactly what I'm talking about. If there's anybody 50, 60 years old or older who's listening to the program, they remember the days where teams essentially owned players from start to finish. But I just say this as a reminder, I've come to believe it, and I think part of the reason I'm no longer jersey guy is that I'm of an age now where I don't buy jerseys anymore. I stopped at Sundin, Tucker and McCabe, Sosa and Pryor. I mean, those are the jerseys buried in the back of my closet, right? It's never going to change at this point. Just don't buy jerseys anymore. But I think part of it too, Dave, is the theory that you can't marry yourself to anybody. You can't emotionally marry yourself to any player because you just don't know. I think Austin Matthews is as close an example to somebody you can. But we're looking at it with Josh Donaldson right now. 2+ years into his Toronto tenure, we're wondering how long he's going to be here for. He could be gone this offseason. And we'll look back at Josh Donaldson and say he played 3 seasons in Toronto. Or maybe he makes it into next year. And maybe he makes it through his fourth full year. But then he leaves in free agency. You just can't marry yourself to the notion that you've got anybody for the long term, and so you can't emotionally invest like maybe you could have 40, 50, 60 years ago.
No, but I think you can with, like, Matthews, it's not even a question, right? Like, when you get a player of that caliber in a league of this nature where it's so hard to find players like that, and you can't acquire money other way than drafting him, like, the Leafs basically have a gun to their head. They will have to pay him what he wants within reason for an 8-year term. Because that's just the way of the NHL now. The same with Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid was guilted by social media, if you believe some of the scuttlebutt, into taking a wee bit less from the Edmonton Oilers. But he could have got more if he would have been a capitalist hard-ass and said, hey, I'm not taking a dollar less than I'm worth. Give me 20% of the salary cap, please. So, you know, but you're right. Everybody else outside, like, that short list of guys that are elite beyond reason, everybody else is a big question mark and what you're going to get from them and will they stay healthy? And that's the gamble you take. And it's an uncomfortable gamble, to say the least, in a league where there aren't a lot of ways to escape if you make bad deals.
All right, Scott MacArthur, Dave Festrick with you. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Blue Jays general manager Ross Atkins will join us in about 10 minutes' time at 5:30 here on the program. Don't know if you've heard this one, Dave, but as we know, the Baltimore Ravens, this, first of all, before I run, I just rants come to my mind here. The fact that this, and I don't think courting is the right word, but this public sort of back and forth with Colin Kaepernick between him and the Baltimore Ravens, or more specifically the Baltimore Ravens and Colin Kaepernick over the last 4 or 5 days, is just sheer and total lunacy to me. I mean, either sign the guy because you want to bring him in or not. Ravens front office Steve Biscotti, the owner, has gone to ex-Ravens players, including Ray Lewis, asking their opinions. Well, what do you think? How is Colin Kaepernick going to be welcomed into the locker room if we sign him? Now they're going to fans for reaction, and essentially the reaction is split down the middle. So I view it this way. You got angry Trump voter or Ray Rice jersey guy on one side of the equation. And maybe there are some people who don't think Colin Kaepernick can actually help the football team in a football way. So perhaps they're opposed to bringing him in as well. And then you've got other people who like the signing. So we're hearing from all of these angles as this draws out day after day after day. Well, good old Ray Lewis has taken to his Facebook page, and he did a Facebook Live, it's now naturally recorded, sending a message to Colin Kaepernick. Here's 90 seconds of what Ray Lewis had to say to Cap, and then we'll talk about it.
Cap, let me tell you something, brother. I pray for you more than you ever can imagine. All right, your name is in my Bible. That God gives you the vision that you did. I applaud you for the things that you stood up for. My brother, everybody else can speak for you, but until you speak for yourself and demand what you want to do in life, it's totally on you. But it's almost crazy that you see people always trying to respond. Let me tell you something, my man. I've made mistakes in my life, but I promise you, if you look at my track record, the mistakes I've made, I've never repeated twice. You understand? And so what I want to tell you is, from man to man, brother, I ain't got nothing against you. I wish you the best in life. I hope you chase whatever God got for you to chase, all right? And once again, I applaud what you stood up for, because I'm in the streets every day. So while people talking about what this and why Ray said this, why Ray said that, Ray ain't saying nothing. And if people really want to help you, if they really want to help you, man, they'll pray for you, brother. Alright, they'll lead you the right way and stop encouraging you to be caught up in some of this nonsense. The battles you fighting, brother, people way before has been fighting these for many, many, many years. And that's why I take each and every one of these kids, and that's why I take them away from their environments and give them something else to see in life. And that's why I played the way I played. The football field is our sanctuary. If you do nothing else, young man, get back on the football field and let your play speak for itself. And what you do off the field, don't let too many people know, because they're going to judge you anyway, no matter what you do, no matter if it's good or bad.
Oh, man. I had 1,000 different thoughts on that. He's effectively telling him to shelve it, Dave. Shelve it for fear of judgment. I can tell you this right now. Colin Kaepernick, I don't know if he could have predicted this blowing up into what it has, but Colin Kaepernick had to know when he made the decision initially to kneel for the United States anthem at a preseason football game, and he carried that into the regular season, that there could be repercussions, that there would be blowback. He's not concerned about being judged. Ray Lewis is telling him, though, to shelve it because some people aren't going to like it.
That's just ridiculous. That's a ridiculous take from Ray Lewis, who really shouldn't be giving life advice to other footballers, given his track record of, you know, finding himself in situations that were not becoming of a human being, such as a double murder charge that was later dropped, but, you know, certainly did not cast him in a very good light. This is, to me, you know, this is hypocrisy. Like, what is Kaepernick doing here that is so egregious? He is, as far as I can tell, yes, he spent last season kneeling during the Star Spangled Banner, which many people took umbrage with. Outside of that, he appears to be going into inner cities and speaking to kids for a charity that he runs called Know Your Rights.
Know Your Rights. I follow it on Instagram. He's all over the
place. He's all over the place talking to kids about how they come from situations where their rights are trampled upon by many people in their lives, whether it's the police, whether it's their own families, whether it's broken down systems in schools and justice systems and health and safety systems. And he's out there saying to kids, hey, your life can be better than this, and you should demand your life be better than this. I think that's incredibly admirable for a guy who's made his millions and has a very comfortable life to want to spend time voluntarily trying to help kids who don't have anything. And how in the world would it be wise advice to say, don't tell anybody about that. Don't tell anybody about the fact
you're doing. Don't use your platform. Yeah. And I always say, I say this to people who, and I, oh man, it boils my blood. You're telling me that Colin Kaepernick needs to shut up. All right. Let's play the hypothetical game. There's an underprivileged, poor, 22-year-old African-American man who wanders down the street in Ferguson, Missouri, and says, there are problems here. Can somebody hand me a microphone so that I can talk, so that people can hear me? Do you think anybody would pay attention to the underprivileged, poor, 22-year-old African-American man with no public profile? Of course not.
No.
He'd go ignored. So Colin Kaepernick is using the profile that his NFL career has afforded him to advocate for this. If you're not going to pay attention to the poor kid, you can't tell the famous guy to shut up.
And yet another famous guy just did. How about that?
Unless, of course, you don't want to hear about it because you just want to pretend like the world's okay. We'll touch on this again at 6 o'clock. We'll also get into Roger Goodell's nobody's tanking in the NFL claims and a weird comment by a New York Jets rookie safety. We'll touch on that at 6. Blue Jays general manager Ross Atkins will join Dave and me next on Overdrive. Stay with us. This is TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Blue Jays general manager Ross Atkins expected to join us here in just a moment on Overdrive. Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes. Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star is here as well. You're listening to TSN 1050, and you're streaming us on the TSN Go app. Let's get right to it. I always wonder what the day after the non-waiver trade deadline is like, because there's this mad rush to the finish line, and then boom, four Eastern hits. Maybe some deals have to get pushed through, and then what? Here's Ross Atkins, the GM of the Jays. Ross, thanks for taking some time. What is the day after the deadline like? Do you get to cool your heels at all?
You know, there's plenty of work to do. There's no doubt about that. But I did have a little bit more time with my wife and my one daughter, who's not at summer camp this morning, before I came in. But, you know, now it's on to transitioning the new players into the organization and making sure that that's seamless. Also starting to think about what happens in August. So the transactions will continue, and we're going to continue to think about any possible way to make the organization better. It's also a time that typically most front offices certainly will shift our focus a bit towards player development now, because we've been so focused on acquisitions over the last couple of months. So looking forward to spending some time thinking about our player development system.
Yeah, I'm interested, Ross, just in having you expand on that. If you were to break, and I'm talking specifically from a front office, a general manager's point of view, if you were to break the season down into segments, how does that play out? I would assume there's a large focus on the draft leading into June, the deadline at the end of July, player development now. How does a season typically plot out?
Yeah, I mean, so it really is, about the opportunities to acquire talent, right? That's where, that's what drives everything. So that once the deadline occurs, this is a slight lull in terms of acquisitions, because now we're not going to start thinking about free agency probably for, you know, another couple of weeks. But that's not far off. So it's all about acquiring talent, and, developing is certainly an aspect of it. And we've hired an army of people to think about that around the clock, and they're only thinking about that. They're only thinking about players getting better. But the general manager's seat is about acquisitions. That's how our calendar is driven. And the next one for us will be free agency. And then before you know it, we're headed into spring training. And spring training, that drives the month and a half of your calendar there. And then once the season starts, it's not too far before you start thinking about the draft again. So, it is something that you really need to be thinking about each of those opportunities 3 and 4 months before they occur as well.
With general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, Ross Atkins, you're listening to Overdrive, TSN 1050.
So, Ross, a story that's drawn a lot of conversation about your club in the lead-up to the trade deadline was the fact that you guys plan to raise ticket prices next year by 7 to 17%. I believe. And, you know, given the fact that you guys have spent the majority of the season in last place in the AL East, and given the age of your roster, I'm wondering how do you sell that increase to your fan base?
Well, you know, listen, it's not something that I've spent a lot of time, thinking about. I've been hyper-focused on our environment, our baseball operations staff, our culture in the clubhouse, talent acquisition, as we just mentioned, and those are things that, you know, I know that Mark and Andrew Miller have given a ton of thought with fans at the forefront in thinking about this experience. They obsess about this being the best experience at some point in professional sports. So, you know, I think, you know, in any business, in any situation where you're striving to get better, there's going to be evolution.
Yeah, that's fair. But increasing the ticket prices, Ross, it suggests that you feel you can put a competitive team on the field in 2018. And I'm wondering, like, what kind of a challenge will that be given the season you've just gone through?
Yeah, it will be challenging. There's no doubt. But that's what we sign up for. There's nothing about professional sports that's easy. So we want to win. That's why we do it. It's why every general manager wants these jobs, and it's why every baseball operations executive wants to work in an environment. It's not to have great farm systems. It's not to have good prospects. It's to win championships. So we feel as though that we can focus on building our system and still working with the core that is here to be opportunistic, to build around them, and hopefully at the same time simultaneously build depth that can protect this team. But that's not going to happen overnight. What we are excited about is the depth that we've acquired at the lower levels. We've gone from, you know, a system that was ranked in the 20s in professional and by a lot of objective measures, and now we're in the low teens, I think even ranked 11th by one. And those are all varying and different, but I feel that we objectively sit back and talk about the development of our system and the progress that individuals have made, obviously the acquisitions that we made, and we're really excited about the lower levels of our minor league system.
Ross, there's another path, obviously, than trying to contend while replenishing the system, and it's been well worn. You play in that Chicago White Sox team tonight that is, you know, taking a step back to acquire young talent, and they look like they're going to be pretty good in a couple years. Obviously, Chicago is also home to a team taken over by Theo Epstein that ran it down a little bit, lost 101 games and 96 games in Epstein's first couple of years. I mean, that path is well-worn. It's a copycat environment, pro sports, and I'm wondering how much have you considered, you know, maybe taking a page out of that path?
Well, it's interesting because the organizations that you mentioned didn't have two repetitive years of playoff appearances before they decided to do that. So I think that's the difference. I think, you know, we owe it to the fans to do everything we can to build upon that success, and we're going to continue to do that. And the fans have been incredible in coming out to support this team and support this organization, and we're going to do everything we can to get the most out of that core that is here.
With Ross Atkins, the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, you're listening to Overdrive with Scott MacArthur and Dave Festchuk here on TSN 1050, streaming on the TSN Go app. So tell us about yesterday's acquisitions. In particular, Ross, Teoscar Hernandez, the 24-year-old outfielder you got in the Francisco Liriano deal with Houston. Does this guy profile as somebody who could be consequential for the big league team next year?
Yeah, absolutely. That's our hope. You know, we are elated to acquire a player of that ability, with that youth, with the versatility in the outfield, ability to play all three, power on base, defense, a lot of attributes that, you know, are very difficult to acquire in one player. And a guy that's already had success in the major leagues has a very good track record, and someone that projects to be an everyday major league player. So, you know, our scouts did an incredible job of scouting the Houston system. And fortunately, the Houston system is a very deep one, and they were able to deal from an area of depth that we feel will impact us in the short term and long term.
Is he a corner outfielder? Where does he profile best?
You know, I think it's always easier to say that they're going to be a corner outfielder. I think there's a chance he could play center, but we have a pretty good center fielder.
That makes sense. Hey, Ross, what are you hearing about Devin Travis, obviously, whose season has been, unfortunately, interrupted by injury? Are you expecting to see him back anytime soon?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we don't want to get into hard timelines just because oftentimes setbacks occur, but he has made he's checked every box in this progression of his rehab. He's strong. He's in a great frame of mind, extremely positive. He's excited to get back into the fold, and, you know, hopefully we'll see him sometime soon. But whether that's a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, we'll see. But you know, hopefully it's on the shorter side.
It's your guy's job to plan, Ross, which can be very challenging sometimes. And with a guy like Travis, I would imagine that's the case, because he gets healthy and he gets back out there on the field whenever that is. But I would think you're to a point here now where, if you're being real about it, you can't be sure, based on his history, that he's going to be able to stay healthy. Now, I know an injury could happen to anybody at any given time, but it's a different situation with Travis, you'll acknowledge, isn't it? Just because of some of the skeletal structural issues that he has had?
I mean, I wouldn't say it that same way. I think it's been unfortunate, and there's no question you have to factor in track record and durability, and you have to plan accordingly. We'll do everything we can to build in and around it. At the same time, we feel that Devin has earned the right to be given every opportunity to be that everyday second baseman for us. And who knows? Maybe one day it's a different position for him because of an acquisition that we make, or, you know, he's played in the outfield before. He's a very good athlete, but he projects to be our second baseman. He's the best alternative that we have. We're going to do everything we can to get him back into that fold, and we'll have to think about not building depth just in and around Devin Travis. As we've all seen this year, you have to have it at every position to be a championship organization.
With Ross Atkins, GM of the Blue Jays, going forward, Ross, what is a fair and reasonable expectation for the performance level of Troy Tulowitzki?
I think it's better than what's happened this year, that's for sure, and it's probably a lot closer to what he was a year ago. Troy is an incredible competitor that wants nothing more than to be on a championship team, and he understands what it takes to do that. We're going to do everything we can to help him and put him in the best position to be that everyday shortstop for us next year, and we expect that he will.
Hey, Ross, these past few years leading up to where we are now, the Yankees or Red Sox hadn't been the powers that they were previously. They'd taken some steps back, but now it seems, you know, they're trading compliments these days. Dombrowski's calling the Yankees the Golden State Warriors after they acquire Sonny Gray. Not too long after, Brian Cashman had been proclaiming the Red Sox the Golden State Warriors of Major League Baseball. I mean, how does that make you feel as an executive in the AL East, given that these two evil empires are seem to be back to form and ready to pounce?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they've always been strong organizations, and there have been times when they haven't been quite as powerful as they are this year. At the same time, we feel like we can compete with them, and at some point, we're going to be in a similar position where we have enough depth to make acquisitions like that. It's they've done a good job. They really have. Brian Cashman's done a great job. Ben Cherington did an incredible job to build up that system in Boston. We're really glad to have Ben here, and Dave Dombrowski's made some aggressive trades there. So that's a good model when, you start from the bottom and you make great acquisitions in the draft and internationally, and you're playing a lot of players that are homegrown, and then you can be opportunistic in free agency and at trade deadline and not have to rely upon it.
With Ross Atkins, GM of the Blue Jays, joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline, I'm interested in your take, Ross, on the market, generally speaking, leading up to the trade deadline. It seems like, in terms of teams that were in acquisition mode, it was really all about pitching, whether it was starting pitching. We saw Sonny Gray and Yu Darvish move. We saw a ton of relievers go, and we know that this is a day and age of the bullpen. Do you have a theory as to why there weren't a lot of major league positional players who were acquired by potentially playoff-bound teams?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I think the first one is just durability. Pitchers, it's an unnatural movement. Hitting isn't. So, by nature, you're going to have more attrition, and there's a lot every year for every organization. You have to have 6, 7, 8 starting pitchers and anywhere from 13 to 20 relievers that'll come in and out and help your major league team. And most of that is because of how difficult it is to have a 200-inning season and be strong for the playoffs, to have a 75-appearance season for a relief pitcher. It's extremely rigorous and extremely difficult to do for one person. And when you think about doing it across 12 and having 12 pitchers that stay healthy, that's the first reason that you see so many acquisitions of pitching. And then somewhat related and connected, it's just an easier transaction to add a reliever and potentially take a, you know, a lesser reliever that is optionable and put him in AAA, or the acquisition costs aren't as high for a relief pitcher as they are for an everyday third baseman, for obvious reasons.
Good of you to do this, Ross. Thanks so much, and I hope we can catch up again very soon.
Anytime, Scott and Dave. Thanks for having me on, guys. Have a great day.
The general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, Ross Atkins, joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are on now with 0% financing and lease rates on the Toyota Corolla and RAV4. Visit mapletoyota.ca. So we'll piggyback on our conversation with Ross Atkins. Turn to Dirk Hayhurst at the top of the 6 o'clock hour. We got a bunch of NFL stuff to get to as well. Overdrive continues in a moment. Scott MacArthur and Dave Festchuk, stay with us. TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Dirk Hayhurst, TSN 1050, Blue Jays analyst at the top of the 6 o'clock hour. And we will... Well, we'll get Dirk's take on the... on the trade deadline, and we'll relive perhaps a clip or two from the Ross Atkins interview, which just concluded. And Dave, I mean, I don't know what I take away from Ross's discussion with us. It was kind of what I expected. I did think he volunteered a thought on Troy Tulowitzki that stands out. You don't ever expect much when a player has struggled to the extent of Tulowitzki and he has the previous stature of Tulowitzki. But Atkins coming out and saying, hey, look, this guy's got to be better next year. He's certainly a better player than we saw this year. That's crucial. That position, out of all of them, and you and I have been around the diamond talking about the issues in the outfield, the uncertainty around Devin Travis's health and the effect that that'll have at second base, that position, shortstop, being manned by Troy Tulowitzki, who is in a serious decline, and he's probably done for the season now with the ankle injury, is a huge problem for this team. Huge problem.
Yes, indeed it is, because he's making $20 million this year, next year. The year after that, 2020 is down to $14 million, and then 2021...
You got the buyout at 4.
You got the buyout.
So 58 guaranteed starting next year for the remainder of the deal.
So that is onerous, to say the least. And so what else is the GM of the club going to say other than we think he can be better than he was this year? And what he didn't say was, of course, because it's hard to imagine how he could be much worse.
Well, except, yeah, maybe he couldn't be much worse, Dave, but if he plays next year like he did this year, That's a problem. And if he's not going to budge off the position, and Ross Atkins didn't say that, but there are people around the team who will tell you that Troy Tulowitzki is very much like Jose Reyes. He's a proud player. He does have the greatest fielding percentage of any shortstop in big league history. He is not going to cough that position up.
No.
He still believes he can play that position. And look, this is a guy with a big injury history. He's got another one now. He's also not built like the prototypical shortstop.
He's not.
6'2", 6'3", north of 200 pounds. You get into your early to mid-30s, you don't move quite as well. That's a big body to be lugging around. You're not getting to the ground balls you used to.
Yeah, and that's why you talk about fielding percentage being a bit of a red herring, because just because you're fielding the balls you can get to well doesn't mean you're fielding all the balls you should be getting to as an elite shortstop.
Right. And those three or four steps to your left or right that you used to have, they aren't there anymore, and those balls go for hits, and a few of those, and runs get scored. Dirk Hayhurst, TSN Blue Jays analyst, to kick off the 6 o'clock hour. We got a bunch of NFL stuff to get to, and I hate talking about him, but we have to. LaVar Ball. We'll talk about him for all the wrong reasons yet again. Overdrive, hour number 3, starts in moments. Stay with us. TSN 1050, the TSN Go app.